Okay, members, we're going to get started. We do have a quorum that has checked in, so we're going to get started right away. And what we've got first today is House File 2986, a bill of Representative Dills. And also, the DNR is here. They want to give us a presentation on Asian carp. And if we have time, we'll go to the MPCA, and they're going to talk about the phosphorus study that was done. So with that, Representative Dill moves House File 2986 that it recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. So with that, Representative Dill, do you want to take the amendment first?
Yes, I'd like to add the A041431 amendment to get the bill in the shape that I need it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Dill moves the amendment 1431. The delete everything amendment to get it in the shape that he'd like. I understand that this is what the Senate has passed already.
Mr. Chairman, this is identical language to the Senate provisions.
Very good. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 All no. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Dill, what does your bill as amendment do? Amended do?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for indulging us with this hearing today, and we're here to talk about what may possibly be the new renaissance and future of the Minnesota Iron Range. We're here to talk about iron nuggets and taconite pellets and iron ore mining. Mining began up in northeastern Minnesota, right in the very heart of the district that I represent, back in 1881 up at Tower Sudan in open pit mining, when they discovered extremely rich enriched iron ore, which would feed what was then the common technology of blast furnaces directly into it. In 1884, it was shipped down to two harbors, then by lake down to the lower Great Lakes on ships. And it was a great thing for northeastern Minnesota and the state, for that matter, because it created tremendous industry. In fact, it led America to the very dominance in the world with manufacturing, and led us to our industrial revolution as we know it. But in World War II, the iron ore that was the pure ore, let's call it, began to become depleted. And it was became a problem that the blast furnaces needed the more pure ore, and that we weren't able to provide it in the quantities that they were needed in those hungry blast furnaces. In search of a new technology, the University of Minnesota discovered a process that we now call taconite pellet production, taconite processing. That was in 1958, and with that advent of that very important technology, Minnesota continued to hum along, providing iron ore in a different form rather than the raw ore, but actually in a taconite pellet. So we're going to, for everyone's education about this, if you haven't seen one, we're going to pass around a taconite pellet so you can see the difference. We got one is a taconite pellet and one is an iron pellet, which we're going to be talking about. This was a great discovery. In fact, new taconite mines sprung up all over the Iron Range, all over in all the cities you've heard about in our committee meetings, and new towns were born all across the range: Babbitt, Silver Bay, Hoyt Lakes. Places like that were formerly were just small farms where people were eking out an existence. In fact, during that time, during the Industrial Revolution and during World War II, the famous John Rockefeller once was quoted saying that if Minnesota didn't have the iron mines, that Germany would have ruled the world after World War II. The Iron Range made all that ore for the steel and the tanks and ships and rail cars, and everything made of steel, and incredible buildings were built. And you know, there's a real pride on the Iron Range about what has been done, not only for America but for Minnesota. But there's been some changes again, just like the days that we ran out of the pure ore, and the steel industry was feeding the blast furnaces. There's been changes in the industry, in technology, and in the way they do business. And in the 70s, some of the companies started to experiment with the idea of melting scrap steel. And the scrap was abundantly available because we had cars that were no longer being used, and appliances and things that could be crushed and turned into scrap and then fed into a furnace. At first, the big companies, the big integrated steel companies, the famous ones that you know about, United States Steel and companies like that, they resisted the change because they had all their money invested in these huge, huge, dirty blast furnaces that are famous in Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Gary, Indiana, and places like that. What has happened since then is transformed the steel industry from the classic steel mills of the past to what are called modern mini mills. And these mini mills are much smaller and extremely efficient, and they run their electric fired arc furnaces, and they've been developed to make and refine steel today, and that has caused a problem with Minnesota's taconite industry. In fact, at one time, Minnesota provided essentially all of the taconite for the blast furnaces, and today we provide less than 50% of the taconite that is made into steel today. More than 50% of the steel made today that you consume in your cars and what have you is made for mini mills from scrap steel. One of the things that mini mills have to cope with in the process of using scrap steel is impurities. And these are non-steel things. If you think about a car, and when they strip a car down, they don't get everything. You know, we talked about the mercury switches not long ago in committee, and we talked. They have plastic and a variety of different things in the cars, and those things are impurities that lower the grade of steel if they just use straight scrap steel in the production in these mini mills. To raise the quality of the finished steel, the mini mills put into the furnace something called a virgin iron unit. or a sweetener, somewhat like if you were making homemade ice cream and you kept putting sugar in, the more sugar you had, the sweeter it would be, allegedly the better, up to a point. And today, the product that is generically called pig iron and sometimes direct reduced iron amounts to up to 15% of the total ratio of steel when it comes to scrap versus the virgin iron units. And that has cost Minnesota dearly over the years. And we have seen our present industry erode. In fact, during the Industrial Revolution and up into the 70s and even 80s, there were in excess of 100 blast furnaces operating around the country. And today there are less than 40 blast furnaces. They have been replaced by the mini mills. The demand, because of the use of scrap, has increased so dramatically, and it's just pushed not only the need for the pig iron or virgin iron units, but also the price of scrap steel has skyrocketed. But Minnesota was looking for an answer to extend the future of the iron ore business, iron mining industry in northern Minnesota, in looking to value-added processes that would take the raw ore and increase the iron well beyond the 65% that exists in the taconite. So when the taconite pellets come around, that's about 65%, 67% iron. In the 90s, through some work here at the state and with the Iron Range Resources, a company was found in Japan that was testing a process of making the other product that you have in the bag called which they called a nugget. And that nugget is 96% pure iron. Now you can obviously see that 30% increase in value adding is a huge step and very important, and it provides that excellent product to sweeten the scrap steel used in the mini mills. Minnesota's invested a lot of money into this process over the last few years with its various partners, and in 2002, a pilot plant, about, I believe, 25,000-ton production pilot plant was built on the shores of Lake Superior in a building that North Shore Mining, which is a taconite-producing facility, had on site. And it was a multi-group government-private industry partnership, one of the ones that will, and hope in time, will prove to be the new renaissance of the iron mining business and something that has been good. The furnace that they built up there was a really small, kind of like a Mr. Coffee, so to speak. It's 12 meters in diameter, which is tiny, in terms of mining, but they were making it kind of like you make coffee on a tabletop. It was, you know, an experiment to see if this could move from just the very smallest portions to a larger step. And the pilot project has worked wonderfully. And the pilot nuggets, the pilot nugget plant has conducted 3 test runs, 3 different campaigns, which the nuggets have been made. And in between each campaign, they shut down the plant and they make refinements. And it really works. In fact, the nugget, the iron nugget, the Minnesota Mesaba nugget, is now king, and it's sought all across America for steel making. But the problem is there isn't enough of it. There isn't hardly any of it, because we are just have a little tiny plant making it. And the next problem is that as the industry was, the price of scrap steel accelerated. As the world is, the economy has recovered. The price was originally around $200 a ton for scrap steel. It's now approaching $400 a ton. So you can see how important it is that we've got a product that we can make down in the mid-$100 a ton. You can see how important and what a fast return we might be able to get if this thing all works and we can get this plant built. There's a huge demand for the virgin iron units to sweeten the mini-mill process. And as I said, Minnesota has invested in this technology and on a test basis, and now it's time to build a commercial plant. But the problem is that the commercial plant that was originally scheduled for construction was scheduled for construction on the shores of Lake Superior. And the need for these iron units, because of the price and the fact that the technology needs to get into the market before other people invent a competing technology, has caused one of the investors to want to build a plant in Indiana, even though we have been in a partner, Minnesota has been in the partnership. And they propose to build that plant down at Steel Dynamics right next to the mini mill. And they do have some facilities that are already built that would go some distance at fulfilling that. So we're actually in competition. You may remember the information that Representative Abrams passed out during the bonding bill, referring to the tax bill that we discussed on the House floor. The article was copied from a Chicago newspaper, and it said, and I'm going to quote, "Ever since the Mesaba Nugget plant came to Silver Bay, the people in this isolated Lake Superior town have been keeping their fingers crossed. If the $30 million plant works, the next step would be to build a full-scale plant and possibly 200 new jobs for a chronically job-hungry area. The test in its final months, it looks very, very good. It's every bit as good as we thought it would be," said Larry Layton. "I think this is the way we'll make iron in the world for the entire next century." So I think you can kind of grasp the importance of this. But it looks as though that first plant is going to Indiana because of the urgent need for the nugget plant and for the sweetener, for the scrap steel, and the high prices and the urgent need for the virgin iron units. The environmental review is the problem, because down in Indiana, an environmental review on Lake Superior takes about 2, maybe 3 years to do a complete environmental review. And down in Indiana, they can get this done in 6 months or so. So you can see that we are really up against it to get this first plant. Now, I'm not here to tell you that we think that we ought to suspend make any changes to the rules on Lake Superior, because you've heard me speak on the floor before about what a valuable resource that is, and it is an incredible resource, and we should be protecting it and always being cautious as we move forward along the shore of Lake Superior. But locating the Mesaba Nugget plant in Indiana would be a given if we couldn't find another place to build it. We were looking for an answer as the Iron Range delegation, and we met with members of the business partnership that owns this technology, one of which is Cleveland Cliffs. And we challenged them to look for a new site in Minnesota away from Lake Superior, because there are sites that have already been developed for mining purposes. And they do own a railroad that crosses across most of my district. So they can move the material around fairly readily and fairly inexpensively. Governor Pawlenty got involved in this project and really pushed forward and asked for Cleveland Cliffs to come meet with the governor, and he challenged them to look for a way to keep this plant in Minnesota. So they looked. Cleveland Cliffs did what they promised, and they looked, and they came up with a plan to build the plant at LTV in Hoyt Lakes. Cleveland Cliffs bought that property, LTV, in a bankruptcy. And that those assets, with some help from the Iron Range Resources, those assets have been preserved for a day that someday we would be able to revitalize the industry and redeploy those assets that are so valuable and so expensive to replace. Because, I mean, a taconite mine, roughly speaking, might cost $500 million to build a taconite mine in its entirety. And it was very important that those assets be deplaced, be preserved, so that at some point we could use them. Their idea now is to locate the first Mesabinogut commercial production plant, approximately 500,000 tons production, at the LTV site, and then potentially a second plant in Silver Bay along the shore of Lake Superior after all of the time-consuming reviews have done that are required on Lake Superior. In your packets is this brochure. It's a prospectus. When Cleveland Cliffs bought the LTV site, this was made in conjunction with the Iron Range Resources. And I want you to see on the front page that this looks like Gary, Indiana. I mean, if you've driven through Gary, Indiana, that's what it looks like. And it's an industrial site. It's fully developed with roads and railroads and natural gas and considerable electricity, settling ponds, tailing ponds, and all of the infrastructure that goes with an iron mining operation. And more specifically, if you'll turn to page 4, and at the top of page 4, it says property. If you fold it so that just the property page shows, you'll see a building there in the middle of the picture with the smoke coming, with steam coming out of it. And this is the building that we hope to locate, if all things work, locate the new Mesabinogut plant and technology in that existing building. If the existing building can't be used, we'll build it adjacent to it, next to it. And what this bill, as amended today, requests is some modifications of the LTV mining operating permit to accommodate the Mesabinogut project. And what this bill is asking is that the requirement for an environmental impact statement be waived because of the existing LTV permit. Clearly, there is not a better site that we are aware of to locate the Mesabinogut plant than on the existing brownfield site up at LTV. And this was the reason that so many people worked so hard to preserve these infrastructure components so that someday they could be redeployed. And under these circumstances, the MPCA has told us that they can get this permit issued in about 10 months, give or take. And the MPCA has assured us that they will dedicate the same number of hours of environmental review to this project as they would with any other project, and that the MPCA will critique the project in the same way as other projects. The MPCA will provide the same public comment period. Where the time frame is shortened in the EIS requirement, we're asking that be waived only for the first plant. And I want to make that just perfectly clear that this bill only applies to this plant, none other, and just at the LTV site. As I said, we hope to locate the second plant in Silver Bay, and will follow as the normal environmental processes there for review. Now, I have several people here that are experts in all of these technical fields to answer questions that have come here to assist us today. And I'm going to have Dick Anfang first come up from the State Building Trades. He is the president of the State Building Trades, and he'll just take a moment, and then we'll go to questions if that suits the chairman.
All right. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dick Anfang. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council, and very appreciate the opportunity to talk to the committee today. The State Building Trades has 10 building trades councils around the state, two of which are on or in or near the Iron Range, Minnesota, very close to actually that's these two plants will fall within the Iron Range Building Trades jurisdiction and the Duluth Building Trades jurisdiction. They each have presidents, local presidents, who are following this potential for these plants very, very closely. Unfortunately, they weren't able to come down today to testify as residents of the communities that are going to be affected by these plants. They asked me to testify on their behalf, so I'm here to do that today. And the message is that the Iron Range, as you know, in northeastern Minnesota, has suffered setback after setback after setback in the last 10 or 15 years. The construction trades workers that are up there are skilled, they're ready to work, but the unemployment is higher in the construction trades in that area than most other areas of the state, and it's high across the state. So they are in worse shape. This has been the light at the end of the tunnel for them, for a lot of them that want to stay on the Iron Range and in northern Minnesota and raise their families. They're looking for, and these are very, very important jobs, well-paying jobs that support families and fringe benefits. And after following the process, dealing with Representative Dill and Senator Bach, they're convinced that the environment is very, very important. It's of high concern. Otherwise, why would they want to stay there if it wasn't? They want to preserve it as much as everybody else, and we believe that the work that's been done by the authors to ensure the environmental safety will occur, will be there, and the jobs will come sooner rather than later. And I'm urging you to support this bill and put some folks back to work sooner rather than later. Thank you. If there's any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Anfang? Sir, could you spell your name just so we could have it
sure.
for the minutes?
A-N-F-A-N-G.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, I might say, first off, I want to let you know that my eye here, I went to the endorsing convention last night, and this is what it's like up there. No, I'm just kidding. I had a little retina surgery today. But nonetheless, Sandy, Commissioner Lehman is here from the IRB, and so is Brian Heady, the Deputy Commissioner. And if we have any economic development questions, we can ask those. I also have Ms. Foss here from MPCA, and I think that that's probably the person that we would want to bring forward now in case the end of
well, we'll take any questions from members of you,
oh,
Representative
Bill.
And
right
members, I would also want to add that we didn't have any minutes. Everyone signed off on the minutes of our last meeting. No minutes to approve at this committee. So any questions of the members? Representative Swenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Dill. I want to commend you for bringing this forth, but is the purpose of bringing this bill to try and have the permitting process speed it up or get through based on the site having a permit in the past and that type of thing? I think your purpose is certainly commendable, and I just wondered if that the purpose of the bill? Is that, you know, that what the bill is trying to accomplish, is to ease the permitting process for your project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swenson, the answer to that is yes. There is an existing operating permit already in existence for a 10-ton taconite producing facility there, 10 million tons, I'm sorry, taconite producing plant, and we're working to modify that not only site but the permit so that this can be streamlined and done as quickly as possible.
Representative Swenson?
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. So then your thinking is that this facility, the present permit would take care of this facility. This facility would be at least as environmentally friendly as the present usage and the permit that's been in place.
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swenson, I do want Ms. Foss from MPCA to address that question specifically.
welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Ann Foss from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. First, I want to add a caveat that we have very preliminary numbers from the company on very preliminary estimates of what the emissions from this particular process would be. All of that is typically, you know, brought to down to a very defined stage during the actual permit application process and then during our review of that. They have not yet designed the facility entirely, and in particular, they have not designed the controls. So these are very tentative numbers. What we have is a comparison of the emissions from the permitted LTV furnaces. These furnaces always operated well below the what was allowed under their permit. The numbers for those furnaces compared to the emissions from this particular project would reduce sulfur dioxide emissions by a little over half. This particular project would right now shows approximately the same nitrogen oxide emissions. That is still very tentative. And it shows a fairly significant reduction in the particulate emissions and a slight decrease in mercury emissions. So it is cleaner, as clean or cleaner for all pollutants than LTV furnaces.
Representative Swanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so then the MPCA opinion is that they're supportive of this bill and as presented to us. I mean, does the MPCA have a problem with the proposal, or are you supportive of the proposal? I guess that's
Ms. Foss.
Our agency, the administration supports the bill. Our agency typically is not supportive of the bill that would waive environmental review. However, in this particular situation, there's language added to the bill that ensures that under federal law, the furnaces that exist at LTV could be used to offset the emissions from this new project and therefore possibly avoid a number of federal regulations that require quite an intensive review. This bill precludes the company from using those emission credits to avoid that review, and therefore the furnace, the new process will be subject to very intensive review. This will be required by federal law. Due to that fact and the fact that we do have quite an intensive review in the air permitting process, and there will also be a modification to the water permit, we believe we are not opposed to the legislation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill.
One thing I'd like to add in the legislation you'll see in the delete all amendment is a provision that if this is moved forward, that the furnaces at this location, the taconite production furnaces, are required to be permanently shut down. I mean, we're talking permanently.
Understood. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, this is described as a scale demonstration facility, and since it doesn't say half or quarter scale or anything in front of that, I assume this means it's a full-size scale product or plant that will be remain in operation. This isn't some small-scale model.
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cox, that is correct. However, the size of the hearth is proposed at 60 meters. Mm-hmm. When we get into the plant that would be proposed at Silver Bay, it's my understanding that the hearth will be substantially larger. So this is a stepping stone, so to speak. But I do believe that the plant will continue to operate as long as it's economically feasible.
Well, Representative Dill, the plant at White Lakes would continue to operate even if they build one in Silver Bay?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. And then Representative Dill or Ms. Foss, you indicated the White Lakes or LTV plant has a permit, is a permitted plant, but it is not operating. You referred to credits. Now, are those tradable credits? In other words, if the plant is shut down, the permit is valid right now?
Yes, the permit remains valid, and those credits for shutting those furnaces down are available only to that state, that particular location. They are not available to somebody somewhere else in the state, only for something at that location. This particular bill, though, has language that says that they cannot be available even at this location. I believe it's in, starts on line 33. The shutdown of these furnaces shall not be creditable in calculating the net emissions increase as defined in the Code of Federal Regulations. That's a bunch of legalese, but basically what that ensures is that this particular project will have to go through what the federal government calls the Prevention of Significant Deterioration Review, which requires them to go through a best available control technology analysis, where they have to look at all of the possible controls that exist and install the one that is that has the best removal efficiencies possible. They also have to model with a computer model what the emissions from the facility are and ensure that the ambient air quality standards set by the federal government are not exceeded. They will also have to work with the federal land managers. These are people that ensure protection of the national parks and national forests up in that area, like Voyagers, Boundary Waters. It's actually line 9. I had the Senate version. I apologize.
Page 2, line 9, members.
And so they will have to work with those people to do visibility modeling. So there's quite an intensive amount of overriding regulation that then is required at this particular facility.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill or Ms. Foss, it sounds like you're getting into what I was wanting to ask about. You're referring in line 12, I guess, on page 2, the federal regulation code. And what I was wanting to hear you talk about is the best available practices for best environmental practice for removal of mercury, especially. Is that going to be incorporated into this plant right now under this current bill so that we'll have a scale plant that gets up and running and is using best technology and best practices that we have out there incorporated into the plant design and construction?
Ms. Foss.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I assume you're asking that in particular for mercury?
In particular mercury, right.
What's also required as part of the air application, this application is very comprehensive, is an air emissions risk assessment. One part of that is a look at the assessing the impacts of mercury releases to the ambient air. Our agency is not only concerned about releases to the ambient air, but since mercury is not created or destroyed, we want to know if it's not going into the air, where is it going? What the company will have to do is show us a diagram of what mercury is coming into the plant and then where it goes. Is it finally released to the air? Is it finally released in solid waste? Or is it finally released in the water? Because you don't want to necessarily take it out of the air and put it into the water. You know, that might not be a good idea. So they do need to show us that, and then they need to provide an evaluation of alternatives. These reduction alternatives are not limited to industry standard. They need to include methods to avoid introducing mercury into the process. That means the raw materials. They need to look at raw materials and whether they could use alternative raw materials. They need to look at controls applied to similar sources, innovative control technologies and strategies, some way of modifying the existing process, pollution prevention measures and combinations thereof. And if their selected alternative is not the lowest, then the proposer has to demonstrate to the agency that the alternatives that had lower emissions are either technically or economically infeasible. So that analysis will come in with their application and will be reviewed by our agency as we process the air permit.
Mm-hmm. Representative Cox.
Yeah, one more and then I'll let the rest of you have questions here. And that deals, Ms. Foss, you indicated that the mercury had a slight decrease in emissions in the plant. Is that for the LTV site, not including the Silver Bay site that's talked about? The slight decrease, is this from the one plant, if this plant gets up and running? Or when you say there's a slight overall decrease from the LTV furnaces, does that include this plant and the Silver Bay plant that was talked about?
Well, I believe this is only this plant. Isn't that correct, Ms. Foss?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Thanks. I have a couple of questions. Because this is so new, you're going to have to help us understand this a lot more in depth than we have right now. But the way I got it is you reduce, we're talking about air emissions, reduce sulfur by half and some nitrous oxide, slight decrease in mercury, but I did not hear what you said about particulate matter.
It's a decrease and it's fairly significant. Let me get the numbers. I've got too many different pieces of paper here.
Okay. Without, thank you. You don't have to get the numbers, but now that we've got some reductions, particularly in some of these things, what then happens to them? Does this facility require to have a lined landfill where these things go? Where does the waste that doesn't go up into the air go?
Ms. Foss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if I understand your question, you're saying if there is solid waste, where does it go?
Well, if the inputs are relatively the same, and that's what certainly what I understood from our chief author, we're using the same input material, and that's why we were putting it there. So if the inputs are relatively the same, and it's not going up into the air, and presumably you're not letting it into the water, then I'm asking where does the residue, the sludge, what is it called in this process?
Mr. Chair, Representative, on the for the particulate matter, for instance, the old LTV furnaces had real problems in that they didn't have very much for control equipment there, and also they had poor pellet quality, and that caused an awful lot of emissions. The pellets tended to fall apart. These nuggets, it's a whole different process once you develop the what's called the green ball. I don't know how familiar you are with the taconite process, but you take the fine concentrate and you make little balls, and then you bake them. And when they bake those balls in the furnaces, they tended to break apart quite a bit, and that created a lot of particulate. Whatever the control devices that are finally used in this process, all of that will be evaluated, and if there is solid waste, the question will be asked as to where it would go. One thing that is available to them and that they've talked about already is that North Shore has a landfill that's accessible by rail from the LTV site, and it's a lined landfill. So if there is solid waste that needs to be disposed of, that's probably where it would go. It's a permitted lined landfill at North Shore.
Representative Wagenius.
The message we're getting from you is that this process produces a better quality product with the same inputs. So we're going to have a leftover. I mean, things don't necessarily just disappear. We're going to have a leftover that is messier. So are you telling us that leftover sludge or whatever it is definitely going to be in a lined landfill, or what if it's mercury that's part of the leftover? Does that go to a lined landfill, or are you sending it to a hazardous waste site? I mean, we have lots of questions.
Ms. Foss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think there's a misunderstanding on what the process is that they're actually going to do up there. I don't picture any sludge or anything like that. They are going to be bringing concentrate up from North Shore in rail cars. Concentrate is very fine black powder that's got a high moisture content. They will take that and mix it with some other things and make little green balls or little balls like this. And then they will feed those into the rotary hearth furnace, and the nuggets will be created. There is a slag that's created.
Slag.
It looks like glass almost. And they're looking at possibly selling that as a byproduct. At the pilot plant, they actually, Representative Dill was saying they're selling that. And they're, if they can't sell it, then their thought would be that they'd possibly take it to the North Shore landfill, and they would have to do waste characterization of that slag, because, you know, there are certain regulations with that landfill too.
Representative Guinea.
What I'm looking for is we do have things like mercury, and if your waste product is slag and the mercury is in it, it gets warm, but it evaporates, so we're just moving our mercury around. I mean, if you're using the waste product and it gets pulverized, it gets cracked up, then you're going to release the mercury. That's
as possible.
And I'm looking for it. You said you were going to track the mercury. Well, it's one thing to track it, but I want to know where it ends up finally. That's what I'm trying to get my hands around.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, those questions will all be answered in the permitting process, and in that mercury balance, it'll show where they all ultimately end up. And I want to remind everyone that when that air application hits our office, it's public information. People can start looking at that data right then. We've already told the company that for this particular permit, we are going to require a 45-day public comment period. In 30 days into that public comment period, we will hold a public meeting, probably up in Hoyt Lakes. We typically hold it near the facility. And people will have ample opportunity to see and ensure that all their questions are answered. But the company has not completely designed the facility. The company has not even started filling out a permit application. So a number of these questions are impossible to answer until we get that permit application.
Representative Otto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Ms. Voss, I wanted to ask you, have you ever heard of maximum available control technology?
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I have.
Can you explain what that is, please?
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, maximum available control technology, in 1990, the U.S. EPA promulgated the Clean Air Act amendments. As part of that, they recognized a list of 100, and at that time it was 189 hazardous air pollutants. And they made a list of process units that they felt should be reviewed for emissions of those hazardous air pollutants. And therefore, for those particular source categories, US EPA put the burden on themselves to draft maximum available control technology standards. They've been pretty successful in meeting those goals. For this particular project, where you have a large emission source, one thing that they have to do in their permit application is look at how many of the hazardous air pollutants they emit. If they have the ability to emit over 10 tons of any individual hazardous air pollutant or a total of 25 tons of all hazardous air pollutants, this particular unit would have to undergo a case-by-case MACT. That means that it's a federal oversight. It's a program set out in federal law where they would have to look at what are the control technologies available to control those particular hazardous air pollutants.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been a little while since I've been in committee. I apologize for not going through you earlier. Thank you very much for that answer. So my next question is, so does that mean that this plant will most likely fall under that, the maximum available control technology standards?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is not a specific maximum available control technology standard that's been promulgated for this particular type of source. It is our belief that when the application comes in, it will show that a case-by-case MAC is required, and therefore the application would contain that.
Representative
Adams. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very excited about this plant. I'm excited about the jobs for the area. My only concern is that we do it right the first time, so that's why I'm asking questions anyway, because it's cheaper to do it right the first time. And I have a little handout just to, if someone could pass these out. Because we're a state that has, we're blessed with a lot of water, we also have the challenge we've learned of protecting that water and impaired waters, et cetera, and trying to protect our fishing economy, which I think everyone around this table wants to. It's part of our economy and part of our legacy. I just don't want us to feel pressured that we have to race. I actually have a quote here from BusinessNorth.com, and it quotes Mr. Leighton, who's the president of the consortium trying to do this. And he says, but Leighton said the market for nuggets, assuming the production process passes its third and final test run this spring at North Shore Mining, is big enough to ensure that production plans envisioned for Minnesota will materialize. And then says, we're committed to the permitting for two production units up here in Silver Bay. It will take 24 months to get through that. So you're talking about waiting 2 years for something that will be around for 50 years. So it sounds like they think that this industry will be successful enough that they'll have a plant in Indiana and maybe even a couple in Minnesota. So what I want to make sure that we do is that we're very careful with the way we implement this, that we are using the best technology, that we do protect our waters. As you can see from this particular map, the area up north, I think we saw this one time before in our committee, the area up north in Representative Dill's district does have quite a bit of mercury impairment. And we certainly don't want to make that any worse for anybody that has land up there and wants to go fishing or people that want to go up to resorts. So just using some common sense, I'm hoping that we measure twice and cut once. Can I ask you one more question? Just that, do you know of, can you describe the best filtration available? I know I spoke with you earlier that, you know, you'll have, there's the air to deal with, there's water, there's different areas to deal with, but can you describe what you know of in terms of best filtration available?
Ms. Foss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the best control available for mercury, I am not an expert on that, no. I know the utility industry has been looking at that for a long time, but no, I'm not an expert on that. But I can assure you that we have staff that will be reviewing their technology review for mercury that are experts in that area.
Okay.
Representative Otto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your patience. What I want to do is protect the environment and get this done the best way possible. And do you have health information on what mercury does to folks when they are exposed to it?
Ms. Foss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know. I don't have that with me. We have staff that are experts in that area and could speak volumes to that, but no.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Ms. Foss? Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anything in this proposal that would lower Minnesota's standards with regard to permit requirements?
Ms. Foss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, there is nothing in there that would lower our environmental standards. In fact, the language that I pointed out actually ensures that the federal program would apply to this source and that they cannot avoid that particular federal program.
So, Mr. Chair, and Swasa, in other words, that what we're doing here is we're talking about the process that would be actually in front of the permitting process, but we're not cutting short the permit. vision or all the things that you need to take into consideration for the permitting to actually occur.
Ms. Foss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we are not reducing our permitting review in any way, shape, or form, and our commissioner has assured the company that they should be sure they submit a complete application, that we are going to do as intensive a review as we always do on these particular projects.
Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, maybe just to follow up on that question, I guess you're making a distinction then between the permitting application review and the exemption that you're seeking, or that this bill seeks from what's called environmental review under Chapter 116D. What is eliminated in the process?
Response.
One is preferred to the other, and I presume one is eliminating something that the other has. Is
Mr. Chair, correct? Representative, there currently under the EQB rules that are referenced there, I believe, or the statute that's referenced there, what would be required would be an environmental assessment worksheet. That environmental assessment worksheet looks at a variety of issues, and at the end the question is asked whether there's a potential for significant harm, and the decision is made as to whether or not an environmental impact statement is required. Simultaneous with that EAW process, the permitting process occurs, and the data that's used in the permit process is a significant portion of the data used in the environmental assessment worksheet.
One moment, Representative Clark. I just want to make a statement here that we've been on this for an hour now, and it looks like it's going to go on for a little bit longer. We had some testimony from the DNR and the PCA. The DNR was going to talk to us about the Asian carp problem, and MPCA was going to talk to us about the phosphorus study that was done. I think at this time we should be able to let those folks go, because we're just not going to have time for you tonight. We might still schedule a hearing on those two issues. I think we should hear from you folks before session ends. We would like to hear those things. But at this time, I think we'll let you guys pull out if you want to, and we'll continue on with Representative Dill's bill. But thank you for coming, and look forward to hearing what you have to say on those two issues later on. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark, we couldn't hear you, your first question very well.
Okay. Well, my first question was about what the difference is between the two systems, since Representative Osmond.
I think we figured it out, but.
Oh, okay. All right.
Please speak in the microphone.
All right. So what I heard you say, I think, is one thing that the environmental assessment worksheet would do would be to look at the potential for significant harm. Is that looked at if we... Is the potential for significant harm not looked at, or is it looked at if we go with this other process of, you know, eliminating the need for that, eliminating the environmental assessment worksheet? Is the potential for significant harm no longer on the scale?
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as part of the agency's permitting process, we are obligated to protect the environment and the public. One thing that is required in the air permit, I talked about an air emissions risk assessment. That what that does is look at air toxics, and air toxics covers a broad range of compounds. We talked about hazardous air pollutants before. That's only a small subset of air toxics. What this company is going to be required to do is do modeling of their air toxic emissions and compare those to health benchmarks to ensure that none of the health benchmarks are exceeded. On the water quality side, the effluent standards, et cetera, are all set to protect whatever uses those waters are used for. So, from the air and water perspectives, and if there is solid waste, the solid waste permitting also is, we are obligated to ensure protection of human health and the environment.
Representative Clark.
Well, one thing I was a little confused by, I mean, I believe that is your obligation, but when you were talking about looking at alternatives, you said that what needs to be demonstrated is that they're either technological or economically economic burdens or technological burdens in looking at the alternative. So I don't know what that means. Does that mean that you could have something that would be harmful, have a potential, be significantly harmful, but it just costs too much to do the alternative? I mean, that's, and so that's, I'd like to know how that works.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that discussion was in particular focused on mercury.
Okay.
One thing that I did not mention on mercury is that something in addition is that occurs within agency is part of the air emissions risk assessment. There's also what's called a qualitative discussion. And if fishable water bodies are within 3 kilometers of the facility, which there are in this particular case, I would assume, then the information as submitted by the proposer will be weighed to decide whether a focus analysis should be conducted to assess risks from consuming fish. So depending what the ultimate mercury emissions are from this facility, our agency may also require an assessment be done to assess risks from consuming fish. When I talked about weighing the cost of controls, I did not talk about that with respect to air toxics. With air toxics, what we're saying is they need to model against the health benchmarks, and then the agency makes a decision and a recommendation as to whether or not the permit should be issued.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, and so I'm trying to get to the answer to the question I have. Is there a point then where you say there's a, you know, the air toxics here exceed some benchmark, but whatever economically unfeasible means, I don't know who decides that. Is that the profit line, the bottom line? I mean, who? What does that mean? I don't. What does that mean, like, to the people who live there and to the company? And how is that? What's economically unfeasible mean in terms of this issue? Are we talking about what it costs the company? Are we talking about what it might cost the community in terms of health hazards, long, short term? What? How is that figured out?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is a way that's described in the federal regulations on how you look at economic feasibility. That would be typically the process that we would use too. Something to remember is that whatever we do, whatever reviews we do, and whatever conclusions we come to are viewed by the public. There is a very open process, and this state has a very open and public administrative process, so that if the public disagrees with what our agency is proposing, there are mechanisms for them to follow to protest what our agency is doing. So our agency looks at the economics on a very case-by-case basis, and we typically follow a process similar to what the federal government has laid out in their federal regulations.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Voss, Representative Osmond asked the question whether we would be reducing or maintaining our standards for emissions, which is the question. What is the standard for mercury emissions?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is no emission standard for mercury.
I think that is the problem that this committee needs to address, that there is no mercury emission standard, since this is going to be put in our lakes region. And that it would be helpful if in this bill we incorporated a standard that was workable, so that the federal government doesn't have one, we don't have one, and that that would be the most practical way, since there is going to be, if this bill passes, there will be no environmental review process. But we all want to protect our lakes, and mercury is the pollutant of most concern with regard to our lakes. So we could specifically write into this bill a either a standard for mercury, or we could write in a technology to be used for mercury, so that we make sure that we have the protection that we need. I think that is the Achilles heel of this bill, and but it's very remediable, too. We can remedy the problem. And I think that, Mr. Chair, is the job of this committee to remedy that particular lack in our current state and federal law.
Representative Pence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, where do you go? I just have a couple questions for you, and then I have a couple others. Did an up-to-date permit exist for LTV when it went bankrupt? Yes or no?
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pence, yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, is it still in effect? Yes or no?
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pence, yes.
Okay, and then I have, Mr. Chair, I have a question. I'm sorry, I don't remember her name, but for the testifier. Do you do comparisons on air quality? Since we do not have a control or a standard set for mercury emissions, do you do a comparison on air quality to other parts of the state, such as on the web, such as comparing it to the mercury emissions in Minneapolis-St. Paul, which is also a lakes region? Yes or no?
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not aware that we do that. I do want to remind the committee that the company will be doing that in-depth assessment that I've talked about for mercury, and will be evaluating possible ways to control it, and that our agency will be reviewing that. Another thing to remember, too, is that MPCA staff estimates that only 10% of the mercury that ends up in Minnesota lakes is due to emissions within Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, and that is an excellent point.
Thank you. Representative Wagenia.
Thank you. Let me be a little bit helpful here about how concerned the cities are about mercury. Both Minneapolis and St. Paul have full coal-fired power plants, ancient full coal-fired power plants, and they're both big mercury emitters. And because of that, when we were looking at mercury, we were looking at the fine particulate matter. We have worked for years to make sure that those plants are going to be converted. They are scheduled now to be converted to gas. As soon as you change from coal to gas, your mercury drops like a rock. So we do have that concern, and we are working so that we don't place an undue burden upon our citizens or upon the rest of the state. So we are actually working on that,
Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenia, as I in no way insinuated you weren't taking care of the Twin Cities. No way. I'm just saying there is, in effect, a permit right now that is... It isn't defunct or anything. And also that we don't have a standard in place. We are doing, I understand that they are going to do some comparisons or something, get something up and going. So my question would be, do we put this off because it's not going to be environmentally friendly enough? I think not.
Representative Guinness.
No, I Representative Pence, that's not the suggestion. The suggestion is that when you have a practical problem in front of you, like mercury emissions, and we don't have a standard, then we can sit here and between the good heads in this committee, we can figure out how to limit the mercury emissions from this plant since there is no standard. And you don't have to go through an environmental review process. The alternative is to say, well, you can do it this way. But the alternative of saying nothing is not a particularly good one, just going through a process. So we can I think that with good work and good heads here, we can find something that works for everybody, and that makes sure that when we say to citizens outside of Minnesota, come to Minnesota and go fishing, we don't want to be saying, but don't eat our fish. We want to say, come to Minnesota and go fishing. That's the end of the sentence. Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I'd just like to address, you know, my faith in agencies is not 100%. Now, I taught chemistry and physics for years, but I would trust that she probably, or the MPCA, can devise a plan for this, or has, and I'm getting indications that you are addressing it. Am I wrong? I may be misunderstanding this. So maybe you could address that.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, I was chatting with Representative Dill, so I didn't hear what I'm supposed to respond. What,
Representative Pennis?
Mr. Chair, are you addressing the standard for mercury and how to keep it down, or are you not? Are you qualified to address that standard, or are you not? And if you're not, then we should spend our money more wisely on the agency.
Ms. Boss.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, I assume you mean a standard for possibly all industry. There is currently regulation that's being proposed by US EPA for utilities with respect to mercury, and our agency will be commenting on that. Our hope always is that the federal government will ensure some consistency across the country, and since mercury is a pollutant that, you know, goes great distances, that would be the best solution to this problem. The utilities, I guess I'm not the best person to respond to that because I'm not sure what the state of the research is on mercury controls with respect to, in particular, the utilities and some of the other large emitters.
Okay.
I do know that with the taconite industry, for instance, that there is research being done because they're unsure where the mercury even comes out in the process, and they have to figure that out before they can even contemplate eliminating the mercury.
Representative Otto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm hoping to do here is offer a friendly amendment to Representative Dill's bill, and so that to kind of provide some comfort, the amendment is the H2.
Representative Otto, are you moving this
Can
amendment?
Can I move the amendment?
Representative Otto moves Amendment A2.
Thank you.
Passed out to members. Representative Otto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to make a modification to this amendment, as I had a chance to speak with Ms. Voss and she was explaining some issues with it. So I'm making an amendment to the amendment, which is after must utilize.
Or what line are you on?
Line number 5. After the comment says must utilize the, and cross out the following language up to the quotations and put in most effective available technology that specifically reduces mercury air emissions.
Is that it?
Yeah. Got that? Do you want me to repeat that?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Let's just see if Mr. Helen has it.
I hope they have it. Mr. Chair, members, I think on line 5 after the, it'll read the most effective technology that reduces mercury emissions.
Almost. Most effective available technology that specifically reduces mercury air emissions. Air emissions.
Okay, do we have it, Mr. Hillen?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Otto incorporates that in her amendment.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, this is a friendly amendment because I think all of us around this table, we care, and we want to make sure the best thing happens. We want the jobs. We want the plant. We're also concerned about the mercury. And so all we're asking is that the most effective available technology that specifically reduces mercury air emissions be utilized in this plant. And it's I'm hoping it's just a matter of it's a friendly amendment and that it's comfort language for all of us around the table to protect our lakes.
Representative Cox, do you have a question on the amendment?
Yes, a comment, Mr. Chair. I think in line 4, if they could clarify where it reads the first iron nugget production, is that side or is it supposed to be site or scale? Do you think on line 4?
Mr. Chair, that's supposed to be scale.
Scale?
Yes. Okay. Sorry.
The first iron ore nugget production.
Scale demonstration facility.
Okay. Representative Otto also incorporates that change. Delete side and insert scale. Anything else, Representative Cox?
I would just comment, Mr. Chair, that I guess this is where I was headed at the very beginning. It seems like a comfort language, as Ms. Voss identified, that they're looking at this, and I guess it reiterates it. Thank you.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am not willing to incorporate this as a friendly amendment and for these reasons. First off, the most effective technology that reduces mercury air emissions. First off, we don't know what that best available technology is. We don't know what it means. Do we consider or doesn't it consider economics or technical feasibility? And further on line 6, it talks about scrubbing, and we don't know what kind of scrubbing that is. So if it's
Representative Dill, that's been deleted from the bill.
Scrubbing was deleted.
Amendment.
Okay. further. In the process, in the public hearing process, you can also specify, the public could comment and specify a mercury limit and suggest that to the MPCA. And also, I'd like for Ms. Voss to read from, or to reference a document called Assessing the Impact of Mercury Releases to Ambient Air, coded HG 2003 from the MPCA as a reference to this amendment.
Ms. Voss.
Mr. Chair, a couple of things. I recognize what the representative is trying to do with the language. The difficulty is that I do believe that we are getting this through the form that I also gave you that requires an evaluation of alternatives to reduce mercury emissions. The one flaw I see in the language that you proposed is that media transfer is not addressed. A concern that I would have is what if the most effective control ends up being a water-based control, for instance? That would mean that the mercury is in the water. What do you do with that water? That if you put it in the water, and the water has to be discharged, or then the water has to be treated besides, and then you have the mercury. And all of those types of things are looked at in what the agency is already requiring. We're asking them to look at the media transfer issues, technical and economics, all of that. So that's just the concern that I have.
Representative Otto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that information, Ms. Voss. How about if we take out the word air and just say that most effective available technology specifically reduces mercury emissions, so that we're leaving it a little more open. It's simply comfort language, I think, for members on the committee, because I know that Representative Dill also shares his concern about mercury. I don't want to hamper the business, but we want to have the legislature, this is something that I talk to my constituents about on a regular basis. They want us to reduce mercury, and we are such a smart state. We have such great intellectual capital here. We have good scientists. And I know that you all are trying to do your job, but what I want to make sure happens for all of us up here is that they really do look at the best available technology to reduce mercury emissions.
Representative Otto incorporates in her amendment to remove the word air between mercury and emissions. Representative Corning.
I've got a question for Ruth or Cogburn there, Representative Dill here. Representative Dill, isn't that kind of a vague amendment? I mean, what was offered, I kind of worry about the what the industry thinks this, because by whose opinion? What if they discover some method in Bangkok or somewhere and it's not even available, or by whose opinion is the best available? So I just kind of worry about the amendment being so vague and costing an arm and a leg to implement something and not even knowing if it is the best. So, isn't it? What would you think about this amendment?
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cornish, it's too vague. We don't know what the best available technology, we don't know where it's going to be located. We don't know whether it's technically feasible. We don't know whether it's economically feasible. We don't know how it would transfer the mercury to what medium and how the medium would be handled after it was transferred from potentially air, maybe to the water, or potentially from the water then to the air. It's too open-ended. I'm not willing to accept it as a friendly amendment.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Representative Dill, it saddens me that you're not willing to accept it as a friendly amendment, but since there has been a general concern in mercury in this state, and it's a major concern because we have such a huge fishing industry and a huge tourism industry, it seems to me that there is language that works to make sure that we do have more than just a process, because the agency's proposing a process that, and since there is no mercury standard, that we figure out, we're practical people here, and that's the job of this kind of committee, to figure out how we have something that works for all of us. I happen to think Representative Otto has made a very workable language, because I think it's workable as it is, because the word is available is in here, and she's specifically reducing mercury emissions, not going after any other emissions other than mercury. But it seems to me that the agency should be able to give us more specificity at this point than just to say we'll go through a process. What more can we do because there is no mercury standard?
Well, Ms. Voss, didn't you state earlier there's no mercury standard now in the state of Minnesota or federal standard?
That's correct.
Representative Wagenius, I'm not sure where you want to go with that. I mean, that's not within the... I don't think it's within the knowledge of this committee to come up with a standard, if that's what you're trying to get at. I think we're going to have to get some scientists and some other people involved in doing something like that. But we can't do it here in the next half an hour that we're going to have this vote on this bill. Representative Wagenius.
Well, I actually think Representative Otto came up with not a standard in terms of how many pounds, though we could certainly say that. That would be one way of doing it. I don't know. What poundage limit do you have on this plant right now for mercury emissions? What is in the permit right now?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is no mercury limit in the permit.
All right. So the current permit has no mercury limit whatsoever.
As far as I know, the only permits that have such things are possibly incinerators.
All right. So that means we have an actual double problem here. I thought there was going to be some level of mercury, not just as much as you want. So there are two ways to do this, basically. You can say, well, no more than this amount of pounds, or you can say that you need to use the technology that pulls it out. Now, I think the words here are pretty artful, but there may be a different group of artful words that work for members. You can do it two ways, and we don't we are practical people, Representative Hackbarth, and I think we can be good at this.
I think we have some common sense, too. This new plant, the old plant's going to be shutting down. That's going to be putting out less, the new plant's going to be putting out less mercury than the old plant was. So,
I don't know that.
Yes, we do.
Oh, a slight reduction is what
slight
it was
reduction.
Said.
Representative Otto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to ask Representative Dill something, because I know you want to get this done, and I understand that, and I want to get it done, too. So I'm not trying to throw a monkey wrench in the works. I just want to ask you, would you expect this plant to try to do all that they can to keep mercury out of the environment?
Representative Dill.
Again, Mr. Chairman, Representative Otto. Again, the agency will require that in the actual permit. The public has the ability to request a mercury limit, so thereby essentially setting or requesting at least that a standard is set for the maximum amount of mercury. And again, I refer to their to the MPCA document HG2003 that refers to the assessing the impacts of mercury and how they are going to do that in their document. And I'm again going to ask Ms. Foss to review this one more time.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Otto.
Excuse me. Before she does that, I have this document as well. She shared that with me.
Okay.
Here's my concern. It says applications for modifications as defined in Chapter 7007 or new facilities in these sectors should demonstrate that mercury emissions have been accurately quantified. Okay. And that the project's mercury emissions have been minimized through an effort to identify cost-effective emission reduction alternatives. Okay, so cost-effective, and then you have a debate of what's cost-effective. I was in business. When we were in business, we wanted to be the most innovative, the best, the most innovative and the best. You know, it's good for everybody. So I don't see why this company, we're not talking about having to dig into Bangkok, Representative Cornish, available, just stuff that's available. There's plenty of groups out there that can help you figure out what's available and reasonable. And if it's going to cost a gazillion dollars to put it in, sure, then it's not cost-effective. But I'm trying to create comfort language, and maybe it needs to be revised again. That, and then in that same sheet, you know, it says alternatives should include methods to avoid introducing mercury into the process. Should is not must. It's should. So all I'm trying to say is, as legislators, and I know that every single one of us around this table, because I've heard all of you talk about it, we all care. We're on the same page. We share the same vision. And so it's a matter of how we get there, and it's either totally entrusted into the MPCA's hands, or we as legislators right now can just say, you know what, without jeopardizing the project, we want the most innovative, reasonable, maybe I need to add some language. Maybe you guys can help me. Reasonable, should we say, I can add reasonable, because I don't want it to cost a gazillion dollars. I want it to be reasonable. How about the most effective, reasonable, available technology that specifically reduces mercury emissions? Reasonable would mean, then, that you're taking into account economics, okay? But I think that we all want the same thing, and we're trying to set it up right, and you're saying the language in HD 2003, this handout here, I'm saying should, and through an effort to try to identify, you know, it's a little soft for me, and so what I'm hoping for, all I'm trying to do is to do it right the first time. We have an opportunity here, this is what I'm getting paid for, to try to help assist in that. And so I'm trying to be very reasonable myself and trying to find something, and perhaps Representative Pennis has an idea.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Otto, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm wondering that I believe Representative Dill is concerned about the language being too prescriptive and maybe tying something down that when we don't really know exactly what the end result of that could be. And yet, I think you're saying you want to make certain that the department has good direction as to what the outcome is going to be, even though we're not sure how they're going to get there. And so I'm wondering if it, and I'd need help from counsel, but something that to the effect that the MPCA shall strive in the permitting process to assure the lowest mercury emission limits reasonably possible. And that puts us on record as we want the lowest mercury emissions possible, but we're leaving that up to the department on how to do it, and we'll rely upon the permitting process to actually get us there, because that's what we're establishing here, is that they have to comply with the permitting process.
Mr. Chair?
The
thank you. Mr. Chair, I love the suggestion. I think that's great, because then it allows us to provide that direction, like you said, without tying anybody's hands, but just sending a message that we want exactly what you said. So
Representative Otto, do you want to withdraw this amendment and have MPCA come up with another amendment that states something like Representative Osmond would like to move to?
Can we incorporate his language into
Well, I don't know if we have any language from Representative Osmond. I think it might take some time for the department to come up with something.
Okay. Sure. Mr. Chair.
Representative Otto withdraws the A2 amendment.
Okay.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would submit an amendment that would go in the same locations as Representative Otto's amendment, but it would say, and I need to have your patience, I'll read it out slowly, but the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency shall strive in the permitting process to assure the lowest mercury emissions limits reasonably possible. So this is direction to the agency. It's not tying down the industry specifically, but it's directions to the agency to use that. This is the discretion that they should use in their permitting process, seeing we do not have an absolute standard out there for mercury.
Okay, with that, does the agency have, does the department have that language? And we need you to comment on that language. We can give you some time if you need to. Representative Dillon?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm going to read it back and make sure that we have it at the front desk. Oh, we've got it, right? Okay, the MPCA shall assure that the shall strive in the permitting process to assure that the lowest mercury emissions limits reasonably possible. The only word thing we have a problem with is the limits. We're okay to ensure the lowest, I'm okay with it to incorporate as a friendly amendment, the lowest mercury emission reasonably possible. Just striking the word limits. I would be acceptable that on a friendly amendment if Representative Osmond is so desires to amend his amendment.
I would incorporate that.
Yeah. Mr. Helen, have that so we get this bill.
It's as I stated, Mr. Chair, except for the word limits. That gets us into evidently another complex area that we don't want to go into.
Just so Mr. Helen has it so we can get this bill, if this amendment goes on, we've got the bill in the shape we need. So, MPCA, you guys are okay with this? All right.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Very good. All in favor of the Osmond Amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment's adopted. Okay, folks, we're going to be cruising on out of here. Anybody else have any questions for the department at this point? MPCA. Okay, Representative Dill, would you like to bring up Ms. Lehman?
I think we're ready to move forward.
Okay. With that, Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 2986 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Is that your motion, Representative Dill?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. We refer to the rules.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, members. Meeting adjourned.